Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Richard McLean.
And I'm his wife, Emily McLean.
Yeah, Jess isn't in this week. He's had something come up.
Or down.
Something mysterious has come up.
We don't know much.
I know.
Well, I know.
I'm in the know.
And I'm in the now.
Anyway, Jess won't be here for a few episodes. So I have enlisted the help of some guest hosts this week.
Wait, can guest hosts be called ghosts?
Yes.
Thanks.
So this week's ghost is... Tell them who you are. Tell them what you do.
Well, I want to see how you talk me up.
Oh, that's not how this podcast works.
Dang it. I am Emily McLean, and I run a business, McLean Entertainment, where I work as a talent manager and end up doing a lot of other peripheral things as well. Consult with entertainers, musicians, comedians, actors, producers on their social media and branding, help with booking, end up running craft services on film sets, which has been my latest fun hobby, and I love it. Feeding people with other people's money, it is great. And I have a very supportive husband. So Richard felt like we should update listeners.
Oh, on what's going on with the podcast. So we missed a few weeks, mostly because we were out of space for uploading it.
Just blame it on the holidays.
Well, that too. That didn't help. So we've worked some things out. I've got a new place to post things. And so we got episode 3 up finally.
Yay!
It's been done for a while. We're not quite on iTunes yet, but the new hosting place integrates into iTunes nicely, so we should get that up soon. I know people have been asking about that.
Get right on that.
So we'll get to that pretty quick. And Jess is missing in action for a while, doing secret stuff, because that's what Jess does. And then when he emerges, there's cool stuff.
I'm the opposite. I tell everybody everything I'm doing.
Yes, that is true.
If you want to follow me on Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, all of that fun stuff, you can find me at McLean Entertain, McLean Entertain. McLean Entertain.
That you can. All right. So we like to start the podcast off with a greeting for special listeners. Do you know what listeners I'm referring to?
Birthday people?
That's the ones. So this is our birthday song.
Hey, 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 it's our favorite day. May we say happy birthday. Hey, 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 it's our favorite day. Dear Francine, happy birthday. On this day, you can have your way. Tell us what you want and we won't complain. Celebrating you, like it or not. Loving you lots and we're never gonna stop. Hey, 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 it's our favorite day. May we say happy birthday. Hey, 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 it's our favorite day. Dear Susie Q, happy birthday. On this day, you can have your way. Tell us what you want and we won't complain. Celebrating you, like it or not. Loving you lots and we're never gonna stop. Hey, 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 it's our favorite day. May we say happy birthday. Hey, 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 it's our favorite day. Dear Henry, happy birthday. On this day, you can have your way. Tell us what you want and we won't complain. Celebrating you, like it or not. Loving you lots and we're never gonna stop. Hey, 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 it's our favorite day. May we say happy birthday. Hey, 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 it's our favorite day. Dear Grandpa, happy birthday. On this day, you can have your way. Tell us what you want and we won't complain. Celebrating you, like it or not. Loving you lots and we're never gonna stop.
Hey, hey, hey.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Yes. All right. What's next on the agenda? What have you been up to this week?
I've been on set filming with the talented director, A. Todd, with Microsoft on a top secret commercial, which will probably be out by the time this podcast is out. Great crew. I ran the craft services, fed people, had a nice healthy budget for catering. So we got to do some fun things like a Brazilian churrasco at Tucano's. Tried out the local Rascas Colaches on Provo Center Street for the first time. Amazing, made from scratch. Yummy breakfast. It's like an omelet in like fresh from scratch bread dough. Lots of running around.
Yeah, didn't they make you PA or something?
Oh, yeah, I helped with PA. So I was the office PA and I ran the craft services and did catering. So a lot of times craft services and catering are shoved together or PA and craft services. So I did all three. It was busy, fun. I learned a lot and can't wait for the next shoot. I love being on set. What have you been up to this week, Richard?
Oh, nothing.
You watched the kids. You're awesome.
I did watch the kids.
When they were out of school.
Yeah, I don't watch them when they're in school.
Yeah, yeah.
What is today?
Friday.
It's Friday?
Mm-hmm.
What did I do this week? Oh, well, I guess I got a bunch of podcast stuff arranged.
Good job. Look at you, coordinating like a boss.
And I edit a bunch of videos at work.
They have like a new stained glass thing open now, don't they?
Holy freaking heck, yes. It's awesome.
I need to come see it.
We need to take the girls. When I get there in the morning, it's not very spectacular.
So what time of day is prime?
When I'm leaving work Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
So like 4 p.m. is the prime stained glass viewing time for the UVU library?
Because right now, that's about when the sun's going down.
Because so it's on the west side, right?
Yeah, so they're really lit up that time of day.
It's lit, yo.
You and your millennial lingo.
Oh my heck. Okay, so Bradford B. Johnson, lovely producer friend, posted this week he was staying at a friend's house when he was here in Salt Lake from LA. He posted on Instagram story the actual Millennium Falcon that was used. His friend bought the movie prop. Wait, is it still on his Instagram story from yesterday? If it is, we'll play the soundbite. Oh, no. He's already back in LA on his Instagram story. Well, it was really cool. I thought you'd like that.
His friend bought
the... He said it was the actual one. And the house was a really nice house. Like, you could tell that some money went into that piece of real estate. Because, guys, I'm also a realtor. Been a realtor for 11 years.
Well, because the movie prop is... full-size model.
Yeah, it's like this big. It looked like it was about this big on the counter.
Oh, the miniature prop.
Yeah, the miniature. He doesn't own the giant one. He has the little one they used for, like, the scenes.
Okay, that makes so much more sense.
That's why it's a prop, not, like, a scale...
No, that's called a model, not a prop.
Oh, I'm new to the movie business, guys, but I'm killing it. Yeah, okay, so he has the actual movie model of the Millennial...
Are you sure? No, you're not making excuses.
Millennium Falcon.
It's probably bigger.
I don't know.
I would guess yay big.
His friend could have been lying to him, but it was on Instagram story, so it looked about the size of my phone.
Okay. So this week we have an interview of Brian H. Taylor.
Good guy. We've known him for years.
I've known him since junior high.
I have not. I've known him since college.
But we talked about that a little bit in the interview, so I won't get too much detail.
Did you talk about when he lived beneath us?
No, I didn't.
He rented our basement apartment for probably a couple of years when we first bought our house in West Valley after we were married. That's true. He was a very, very good tenant.
He was the best tenant that we had.
So true.
All right, so Brian Taylor. Thanks for coming down, Brian. Appreciate you coming down to do the podcast for us today.
You bet.
Why don't you tell us your name and what you do?
I'm Brian Taylor, and I'm an illustrator, and I illustrate mainly comic books and graphic novels, that sort of thing.
Okay. Is that what you do for a living?
No. For a living, I'm an illustrator and animator at an educational software company in Provo, Utah. Yeah, it's called Imagine Learning.
Okay, cool. Awesome. So this portion of the podcast is called iTick, and we just have some questions that we've come up with that we try to kind of figure out what makes a person tick. There's a lot of podcasts that people talk about what they do, and people talk about how they do it. And so I think on this, we're just trying to figure out why people do what they do. First of all, tell us what your earliest memory is.
My earliest memory, let's see. I think the first thing that I remember would probably have to be staying at my grandparents' houses, both sides. They switched off taking care of me while my mom was pregnant with my sister because she's diabetic. And so they, you know, she had to be kind of pretty much, what do they call that?
Bedridden.
Bedridden. Is that the right term? Okay. Yeah, she's pretty much bedridden. So, and then my dad, you know, had to work during the day. So it was just, my grandparents pretty much watched me for most of the time that my mom was pregnant with my sister. So yeah, I have a lot of memories of that and just, yeah, spending time in, they lived in Orem. The specific memory that I can recall from that time period is like right after my sister was born and my aunt asks me at my grandparents' house if I want to go see my sister who's just been born. And I didn't want to seem overly excited about it. Because I wanted, even at the age of 2 or 2.5, I was like, well, I'm going to downplay this, you know. So I'm like, nah, I don't know. Nah. You know, just kind of acting like I don't really care. And so I think my aunt thought that was pretty funny. I remember her laughing at me and I couldn't figure out why she's laughing. I'm like, I'm playing this cool. Why is she laughing at me? So, but yeah, I don't have anything real significant from that time. Just little moments like that.
Right. All right, Brian, do you have another story from your childhood that has been highly influential in your life? Maybe something you haven't shared a lot?
When I was a kid, we had a huge field that was in my backyard and it extended for maybe a mile or two. I don't know. It was really big. So I spent most of my childhood just, you know, hanging out in this field, playing in this field with friends. And I mean, we built clubhouses. We did, you know, all sorts of fun stuff. Made a kind of a haunted house sort of thing around October every year in the field, and took kids through it. And it was like, I think we actually called it the haunted field. Something unoriginal like that. But we were always having. So I mean, when I think back on my childhood, that's pretty much my memories are mainly of me either, you know, drawing or something, or being out in this field with friends. And that was, you know, pretty much my whole childhood, you know, having adventures and stuff. One in particular that I recall, which is kind of funny, is we were playing army, and there was a bunch of us, and we were all, you know, pretending to be soldiers during a war. And I was always a very imaginative, embarrassingly imaginative little kid. And so these, you know, I would get so into what we were doing, right? And I would kind of see it in my mind's eye. This was like an epic movie, right? This was not just us out there playing, but this was real, you know? And so then the sun started to set, and one by one, my friends started getting called in, you know, because it was bedtime. But for us, it wasn't that. It was that they were, you know, they were getting killed, right? We had to have a death scene for each kid as they got called in. And so each kid, it was an epic death scene. And we're like, hang on. I'm not leaving you here. They're like, I'm sorry, man. I gotta go or something. And they're dead, right? And so then they go inside. And pretty soon, well, it was me and this other kid for a while. And then he finally had to go in. And then I was alone by myself to wander, you know, through the wilderness. And, you know, avoiding the gunfire from the enemy that was still out there, mourning for the death of my fallen comrades and all of that. Yeah, it was like epic, you know. It was beyond just pretending, you know. It was like, this was real stuff, you know. And I've always been kind of like that. And I've kind of carried that over into my adult life with, as far as like writing and that kind of stuff goes. I think that's why I'm still into that kind of stuff. It's my outlet for for that sort of thing. Cause I've always really liked stories and storytelling, a story that makes you feel something, or cool ideas, that kind of thing. So that childhood experience kind of set the rest of my life up, you know, playing in that field. Now I'm, you know, writing and telling stories and essentially doing the same thing, but in a slightly more socially appropriate way for an adult. So there you go.
Awesome. So if you could share with us a piece of music that's been highly influential in your life.
Okay. I've got a more recent one and then one from childhood. Is that okay to do
too?
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Oh boy. Okay. The older one, of course, is embarrassing. So
awesome.
So when I was a kid, I mean, clear up until I was a teenager, I was not aware of a lot of things, but specifically with music. I'd hear stuff on the radio and I liked it, but I didn't really know who sang it, and I wasn't up on the current bands that were popular or whatever. And so I kind of just did my own thing. I think it's because I didn't have any older siblings to kind of steer me in the right direction, and I didn't have any friends that really told me what was cool or whatever. So for me, it was movie soundtracks, and then before movie soundtracks, I just remember there were a couple songs that I discovered, you know, artists or whatever that I discovered through like movies that I had seen. And one in particular, this is so terrible. But so I went to go see, my grandma took me to see Karate Kid Part 2, okay? And I don't know if you remember, but there's this song, this song in it. I'm going to cringe saying the name of this song. It's called like The Glory of Love or something like that.
Okay.
By Peter Cetera.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
So my grandma buys me the, I guess I saw the soundtrack to it at some department store. And so she buys it for me. And I'm just excited because I was so into Karate Kid, right? And I listen to this song and it's all talking about like being a knight and shining armor and, you know, and just all like heroism and everything. And you listen to it now and it's so dated and just cheesy.
Sappy.
Oh, it's so sappy. Oh my gosh. And I just cringed that I ever thought that this was epic. But, I mean, that's all I was exposed to. That's all I knew about at the age of, what was that, like 7 or something. Maybe even, no, I think I was 7 or 8. And so it, like, I look back on my childhood, and that kind of, like, set the foundation for the stuff that I'm interested in as far as, like, I've always been into, and I don't know what came first, if it was this song or if I was just already interested in this stuff, but I've always been into, you know, like, tales of great heroism and stuff like that, you know? Basically, guys with swords running around, you know, fighting stuff. Yeah, so I mean, that song was like perfect. I don't know. I don't want to say much more about it because this is just embarrassing even be admitting this. But that was the one that, like, for the longest time, I was like, that was my song. And then I realized how ridiculous that was and then moved on. But that's always stuck, you know, the whole heroism sort of thing in storytelling and just in life in general, you know. And it goes along with, you know, being a fan of comic books as a kid and all the heroes and stuff in comic books and just wanting to emulate that. And so, of course, it would appeal to that kind of sensibility, right?
Right.
So anyway, okay, so here's a more, what's influenced me recently is a number of years back, probably 2006, 2007, this movie came out, Lady in the Water by M. Night Shyamalan. And say what you will about the movie, I'm not going to comment on it one way or another, but I'll say I'm not a huge fan of it, but.
Okay. I haven't seen that one.
Oh, you haven't? Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't know, you might like it.
I want to see his new one, Splice. That looks really good.
I'd forgotten about that. I have seen the trailer. That does look really... Well, it looks freaky.
Yeah, it does look freaky.
But, yeah, I'm kind of interested now.
I want to see that one.
Anyway. Okay. All right. So, yeah, Lady in the Water, it's supposed to be this modern-day fairy tale kind of thing. And I don't know. Well, okay. I just... trying to not be negative here. The movie wasn't what I expected to be, and I was pretty... It got terrible reviews, and I just wasn't really a fan. But say what you will about the movie, the score to it by James Newton Howard is amazing. So I discovered the music around the time that I was writing. I had started writing the book that I'm doing now.
Okay.
It was going in a completely different direction. It was just all over the place. I didn't know a whole lot about writing at that time. And so it was just... It had gone to some weird places with the story. And anyway, so I listened to that music, and I think it was either the last or the second to the last track to it. It's, I don't know, there's just some really moving, very kind of fantastical music in it that's just, it just blew me away. You know, it's just amazing. And still to this day, I can listen to it and just enjoy it from a symphonic point of view, or just, I don't know, just that, like, I just love the music in and of itself. But at the time, I listened to it and, you know, just kind of with my story in mind, and it completely, like, the ending to my story, which I had not been able to figure out until that time, just played itself out like a movie in my head while I'm listening to the song. Like, it just plays itself out. And I sat there, like, dumbfounded, you know? I'd used film music before to kind of help me figure out story beats and stuff that I couldn't work out, but I never before had something happen like that where I could turn on some music and have it actually inspire an entire, you know, big scene or ending, you know, to something I'd written. So that was, you know, that was significant. Still to this day, you know, I listen to it and I'm like, yeah, this is amazing, you know? So the ending to the story hasn't changed. Like, a lot of the other things about the story have changed since then. But the ending was pretty much set in stone.
Mm-hmm.
And I reverse engineered the story to fit that ending.
Okay.
And the story became a lot stronger and a lot more cohesive as a result of that ending, which just kind of came as this leap of I don't know what you'd call it, like, just being inspired by this music. So there you go.
Fantastic. Could you share with us another piece of media that's been highly influential in your life, be it another song or a movie or a cartoon or a book, painting, game show, radio show, just whatever, just some other piece of media that's been really influential to you?
Okay. Well, there's been several. If I had to pick just one.
I understand. I mean...
Yeah, looking at your shelves.
I've got a wall of movies right there.
If I have to limit it to one, I mean, of course, you know, it's going to be Star Wars. That's an easy one. You probably already knew probably what I'd say.
I actually did.
Yeah, that's got to be it for me. Yeah, I just can't think of something that's influenced me more as far as, I don't know. I think for me, the thing that's It's got everything that I like in it. Mm-hmm. Like, everything that I'm interested in was shoved into Star Wars and made into a movie. Now, I'm a little bit, like, I don't remember, let's see. I was born slightly after Star Wars came out. So, but still, I was young enough, I don't remember it at all. I vaguely remember seeing the movie poster for Empire Strikes Back. But Star Wars was re-released, I think, between Empire and Jedi. And so my mom took me to see that. And so I remember that, seeing Star Wars on the big screen, you know, for this re-release. And yeah, and then just ever since then, you know, like most kids that age, I was just obsessed with Star Wars. And I always have been. And it'll kind of wax and wane a little bit in my, like, maybe elementary school a little bit. And then, yeah, even in junior high, before anyone else started getting, you know, the Star Wars revival started happening. Even before any of that, I was into it again. You know, started collecting the figures again and that I had when I was a kid, trying to find those and buying the soundtracks and everything. And so when the news of new Star Wars movies came out, I think I was more excited than anybody.
You were definitely more excited than me.
Yeah, you remember.
No, I was always... That's the funny thing. Like, I'm like a year older than you.
Mm-hmm.
We've known each other since... Seventh grade,
yeah.
The funny thing is, I didn't think I knew you till ninth grade.
Uh-huh.
And I thought I only knew you peripherally, like you were a friend of a friend.
Yeah.
But then when we were moving to this house,
uh-huh.
And they found my junior high yearbooks, and they found your signature in my seventh grade. In my seventh grade yearbook.
I could see maybe eighth grade, but seventh grade, yeah. Wow. Okay.
Which was kind of weird to me, because I didn't think we knew each other till later. But
I didn't either. I think the first memory I have of you is borrowing... a friend of mine knew that you had...
You had the Beauty and the Beast soundtrack.
Yeah. And you had the art of it, right? Or the art of animation?
Yeah.
Right there. There it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So did we have a trade or something?
I think we trade. I think you borrowed the book, I borrowed the soundtrack.
Yeah.
But we didn't even really know each other that well.
Mm-hmm.
It was just we're friend of a friend.
Right. Yeah. Yep. That's great. And then we kind of became friends. It was like we became actual friends, like what, maybe 10th grade in art class?
Well,
or something?
It was art class, but I think it was, yeah, probably 10th grade.
We did that. We did a commercial together.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought at first, so when we did the commercial, you were just like, I think you were mad about something. And so I thought, man, he's kind of ornery. He's kind of a jerk.
Everyone thinks that about me when they first meet me, but it's just because I'm quiet.
Yeah, yeah. And you just kind of speak a little bit matter-of-factly, you know, when you don't really know somebody.
Right.
And so, but then I got to know you, and I'm like, oh, Richard's cool. So, yeah. So, ever since then.
It's hilarious.
Well, that was a tangent.
Yes, it was. Anyway, I don't even remember what we were talking about. Oh, yeah, Star Wars. I was saying you were definitely more into it than I was.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so when I was growing up, I remember Star Wars always being around. I don't remember it not being around. And I had one friend that was, like, way into it. Like, his dad built him an X-Wing fighter in his backyard.
Whoa. Okay.
That was, like, lifted up off the ground. You had to climb a little ladder to get into it.
Yeah.
And
crazy.
So, it would probably fit in this room, but just barely. Mm-hmm. That's about the size that it was. It was pretty big.
Cool dad.
Yeah. Well, he was a welder and worked in, like, with junkyard kind of stuff. Anyway, so I liked going to his house because he had a ton of the figurines.
Yeah.
And so, like, and the funny thing was, like, the story, like, I knew all the elements of the story. I knew who Luke was. I knew who Leia was. I knew who Darth Vader was.
Right.
I knew about the Death Star. And I had seen, I think I saw Empire in the theater, or it might have been the re-release of the first one you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I remember going to that with my parents, and they were pretty stoked.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they're really not into that and stuff now. But, I mean, it was big.
Yeah. Everybody was like, oh, we got to go see the next Star Wars.
Yeah.
It was and so part of our culture at that point.
I remember going and seeing that at the theater.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably fell asleep just because of the age I was.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I always said that I liked Star Wars. But the story was never clear in my mind until probably high school sometime. I decided I was going to marathon all three movies.
Mm-hmm.
And then it suddenly all clicked. And I'm like, oh, now I get it.
Seeing it all together.
Yeah, seeing it all together as one piece. It was like, okay, now all these elements that I was familiar with finally make sense. Mm-hmm. Like, I even have a storybook of, I think, Return of the Jedi. One of those, when you hear R2-D2 whistle, turn the page.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember those.
Yeah. I've got one of those. I might have had two of those. Anyway, but until I sat and watched all three films, mm-hmm. it was never clear in my head.
Okay.
And so, like, I always liked it, but you were definitely more into it than I was.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there were so many reasons why, but, I mean, again, it's just, yeah, everything that I just liked as a kid was in it, you know? You got, like, kind of the spiritual martial arts sort of thing with the Jedi, and they have their swords, you know, their lightsabers, and you got the crazy creatures and aliens and everything, like the world building aspect of it, and spaceships, and, you know, cool theme, heroic themes, and themes about very strong, like, right and wrong, dark and light kind of stuff, which I've always been a fan of, you know, like, clear morality in films. When the morality is kind of ambiguous, I understand that it's, you know, it's obviously more of a complex story and all of that, and when there's shades of gray in the storytelling and more of a nuanced look at stuff. But, you know, sometimes we need clear-cut heroes and villains, you know? I mean, it's as morality plays to Star Wars, teach us, you know?
Star Wars had that gray area character too, though, in Han.
That's true, yeah. Yeah, there was some of that. Yeah.
Overall, it was black and white, but they had him in there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and there you go right there. I mean, that's a good way to sum it up. You got the Western element with Han Solo, you know, samurai element with the Jedi, and then you got, like, the Buck Rogers sci-fi element in there, which I never really watched Buck Rogers or anything.
I did.
Or not Buck Rogers, I'm sorry, Flash Gordon. Flash Gordon is okay. The original. Yeah. You got the Flash Gordon element, which, for kids of our time period, we had not been exposed to that up until that point.
Right.
And so it blew a lot of kids away to see, you know, that kind of stuff kind of reimagined. It was just really cool to see that all together, along with all these fantastical creatures and everything. I mean, really, it's an exercise in world building where the entire universe, I mean, it has nothing to do with Earth. The entire universe is completely fabricated in a person's mind, you know? Mm. And I think more than anything, that's the thing that impressed me about it and made me such a fan of it up until this day. And, like, any story thing that I do now is based on that, of, like, trying to create an entire world that doesn't already exist, you know? I mean, you've got plenty of stories. You look at a lot of the other big franchises or whatever, and, like, Harry Potter is cool in a sense, because it is a fantastical world that is kind of separate, but it's still connected to our reality,
right?
You know, and I'm not saying that Star Wars is superior to Harry Potter. They're two different things,
right?
But the thing that makes Star Wars cooler in my mind is that it isn't connected to any kind of, it has no relation to Earth. You know, it's just this completely created fantasy world that hasn't been seen since, like, maybe, you know, Tolkien.
That's funny. I was just thinking that that's why I was into Tolkien.
Mm-hmm.
Tolkien was kind of the same way for me, because my introduction to Tolkien was those storybook tapes.
Mm-hmm.
I had The Hobbit and I had The Return of the King, and I listened to them all the time. I loved the stories, and I didn't realize even that it was a watered down version of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I probably would have read that much earlier in my life if somebody had pointed out to me, hey, that's a novel.
Yeah, yeah.
So I found that it was a novel. I found it on the shelf the summer between 6th and 7th grade, and I was like, this is a novel? Why didn't anybody ever tell me this is a novel? I love this story.
Yeah.
And so I read The Hobbit, and then I found out about The Lord of the Rings, and I read through those, and it's funny, because that's kind of the same element that I liked about it, how it was just kind of this complete fantasy world that somebody had made up. I know that, you know, as I've researched it and whatnot, that he kind of was creating Earth before our time. That was kind of the idea behind it.
Creating legends or myths for people in Europe, is that right? Because they didn't have any great heroic tales, and he was trying to create some?
Something like that. That was sort of the idea. He was also a really intellectual guy, and so some of the stuff that's in it was literally him just showing off how good he was at, like, these ancient forms of poetry.
Right, he was a kind of a linguist, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, cool guy.
So, Awesome. It's funny that we kind of both latched onto that kind of same world building kind of thing. And for a long time, I tried to create a world that was as complete as that. And I just didn't know enough to be able to do it.
it's so hard because you literally have to create everything, you know, like you can't have shortcuts, you know, you can't just say, well, the society is this way and use something that exists in our world. You have to figure out, well, how does it actually work in a way that isn't like our world, you know, because it's
right.
You can't just have, I don't know if I'm explaining this well,
no, but I get what you're saying though. And yeah, so for a while when I would write stories, that was kind of what I was trying to do was something.
It's only different. That's what I'm trying to say. It's only different in the ways that you decide it's different. And so the other ways are going to be just like Earth.
Right.
And that's the problem is you can't do that. That's a shortcut. You know, that doesn't work. You gotta really think it through. Like, well, how does their political system work? How does, you know, you can't just say, well, everything's the same except this.
Right. So, and I think I gave up on that at some point and decided to tell other kinds of stories, but I still really appreciate when somebody can do that.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a challenge.
But yeah, it's still, you know, a highly influential thing and it's really influenced me. Anyway.
Cool.
So Brian, tell us about your passion and why you do it.
My passion, I guess currently it would be comics and graphic novels, I guess. And I kind of fluctuated back and forth between that. And I've tried my hand at filmmaking and I've done some animation. But I keep coming back to comics. And I'd say overall, that's probably my passion. And the reason it is because I've always loved to draw. And I've always loved to write. And I've always loved movies. Comics let me make my own movie by myself. I get to write it and I get to draw it. And comics in and of themselves, I love the interconnectedness of the images with the words, you know, as opposed to an illustrated book, like a children's book or something, where there still is kind of that separation. Comics have a lot more freedom with the two being kind of married together. So just as a medium in and of itself, I find it fascinating that way. But yeah, I mean, really what it comes down to is I'm just passionate about storytelling, you know, and that means, well, for me, that means stories with pictures, because I've always, for me, the two have always been, again, they've been connected. I've read novels, but I haven't read a lot of novels, sadly. So it's always been about, you know, like I envision these things, you know, like as, you know, with images, and it's hard to just convey that just with text, you know. I want to show what it looks like, and even as a kid, you know, I would do little stories, and I'd always have to do illustrations with the stories to show it all off. I wasn't content to just have it be words. I guess because there's like the love of creating something that like you bring it into being, you know, it doesn't exist before you create it, and it's just an idea in your head, and being able to realize it in some real concrete form and say, this is what I'm talking about, this is what, you know, I mean, being able to show people and you know, the so conveying ideas, I think conveying also the feeling behind the idea, you know, there's it's not enough for me to just tell somebody something and, you know, a story or whatever. I want them to be able to experience it like I've experienced it, you know? And I think that's the challenge in any kind of media, in any kind of form of media, is how do you convey something that you can envision in a way that causes the other person to have an emotional reaction to it, to for it to move them in some way, whether it makes them laugh or cry or terrified or whatever. How do you convey that effectively so that they have that emotional response? And that's the challenge. Since I was a kid, I've been kind of cursed with this problem where if I see something really awesome, I want to share it with people, right? And as a result, I'm like, oh, you gotta, you know, if it's a movie or whatever, I'm like, oh, you gotta check out this movie, or, you know, like we were talking about earlier, you gotta listen to this song or whatever. And what I've discovered is that people often aren't as excited about something as I am. And so, but I've always been into, you know, trying to entertain people, trying to make them laugh or whatever, you know, just whether it's joking around, you know, just hanging out with friends or just trying to convey, well, like I said, you know, through storytelling or whatever, you know. And I think that it all stems from that core desire of wanting to communicate something to somebody else and have them respond to it. So there you go.
Fantastic. It's all about the pathos.
Yes.
Exactly. Or pathos. I don't know how to say it.
I don't know. Yeah, is it? I think it's pathos.
I don't know. It's maybe Greek.
Maybe it's either way. Tomato, tomato.
Who knows? Okay, this is the hard question, Brian.
Okay.
Brian, what makes you tick?
What makes me tick?
To me, it seems like storytelling is what makes you...
Yeah, yeah, but I can even go deeper than that. So what makes me tick? So I think a good way to explain it would be to kind of give a little comparison here of me... something I noticed about myself in comparison to some of the people that I work with at my day job. I work with these other artists that are amazing. Like they are so inspiring to look at the art they create, you know. And I've just been so floored by how good they are. And I'm trying to be as good as I can trying to grow as an illustrator and really push my artwork and have it be really dynamic. And, you know, I obviously want to improve as an illustrator, but I kind of had this realization a while back and it's every now and then it becomes apparent to me that I don't think I don't think I'm wired the same way as most artists. There's a definite difference between me and a lot of the other artists I know of. And I think the difference is that a lot of artists are motivated by a desire, like they're what makes them tick, right? Is to create works of beauty. They're more craftsmen. They're more artisans, right? They're trying to create a work of beauty that is skillfully rendered or executed. Yeah, like about where the technique that they use is you know, just they're a master of their technique. And while that is, of course, important to me, that is not what makes me tick. And I'm not that way. And I don't have, frankly, I struggle to have the patience to pull off truly masterful works because my motive, my underlying motive, the thing that fuels me, you know, is in a completely different area. And that is more in self-expression or communication of ideas. Rather than trying to become an expert at my craft, you know, and trying to create a masterful image or whatever, what really inspires me, things like storytelling, basically self-expression. That's probably that would be the driving force behind everything I do. And so really, because of that, I, you know, can take on a lot of forms. You know, I've done novels, or I've done attempted novels, you know, tried filmmaking or whatever it is to try to convey an awesome story, you know, make people feel something and be, you know, be motivated or to positive change or whatever, you know, just trying to take what I see in my head or, you know, hearing an amazing song or seeing an amazing movie and saying, I want to do something that makes people feel like that, you know, and for me specifically, it's with storytelling. And so I'm motivated more by the intricacies of story and why doing certain things in a story will cause somebody to feel a certain way, or for a story to work, you know, as opposed to if you do something else, it won't work as effectively. Basically, the story mechanics, conveying or communicating an idea through the vehicle of story.
So the last thing, Brian, is so if people want to see your work, or if they want to hire you for an illustration or whatever, how can people contact you?
Probably the best place to get a hold of me is through my website, and from that you can, it has links to all of my other pages. It's brianharoldtaylor.com. That's B-R-I-A-N. On the main page there, it has links to my Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and whatever else I've got linked up there.
All right. Fantastic. Well, thanks for coming in. It was good times.
Yeah. Yeah, it was fun. Thanks for having me.
All right.
I still associate the song, is it Lifehouse? Falling and I'm crashing into you, with that movie that
so
we made
I.
in college. Every time.
The Black Balloon one is the one I always associate with. Baby's Black Balloon makes me cry.
Yeah. Yep. That's so funny.
Well, I do, because I watched it over and over and over and over again as part as, you know, making it.
Did you guys get into to Squishy. You cat when you had the Batman cowl on.
Oh, we didn't talk about that at all.
There's no two chances. What is it you say? You can't.
You can't. You don't get two good. You don't get two big chances. It's against the rules.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't get two big chances. It's against the rules.
Right?
Right? Your big line. You made it, huh?
I made lots of awesome lines in that film.
You did. Oh, the red punch or the green punch? No,
no. I take the blue punch and the yellow punch. And it makes green punch.
I think you watched it more than me.
I watched it so many times.
And the alien, what, like to have fun and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
That was so cute. So I always think of that one when I hear the 1812 Overture.
That's funny because the 1812 Overture is not in it.
What is it then? Oh no, it's the Valkyrie?
It's In the Hall of the Mountain King.
In the Hall of the Mountain, okay. So I always think of it when I hear In the Hall of the Mountain King. It's interesting how important music, a part music plays in memories and movies and things like that. Your correlation.
I think we are wired to be like that.
Or if you're our children, you're just wired.
No, really, because they've done those experiments where they play Alzheimer's patients music from
their era,
from their prime, and they wake up.
Oh, cool.
It's like people that are in homes, and they're just so in themselves. They're this people that are, you know, they're just a shell of what they used to be, and they don't talk to people, and they're just kind of, you know, the nurses take care of them, but they don't really talk. It's like you're just keeping a husk of a person alive, waiting for them to die. But then they take...
So glamorous, honey.
But that's how it is. They're like...
Okay.
But then they take them, they will put headphones on these people, and they play them music from their prime. They literally come to life. They, like, their eyes open up, and they brighten up, and they can even have, they'll even have conversations and talk, and just, they become a person again.
I think a little short animation about that would be really cute, really touching.
Could be.
Just like a la, up, same style kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Because I feel like the story there is how the older man kind of comes back to life after losing his wife. That's the thing. I think sometimes it might be health failings that cause someone to revert like that. And there might be other times that it's the situation in their life. They can't get around as well. They can't go and do the things they used to be able to do for themselves. So I think some of that reversion might be kind of self-inflicted, but, you know, situationally.
Right.
It'd be an interesting study.
There was one.
Oh.
Yeah, they did a whole big... I think there's even a documentary on it. Thank you. All right, so that was Going to Work off of a binaural audio demonstration cassette tape that I found at the thrift store. I hope I don't get in trouble for playing it. I actually tried to contact the guy and ask permission, but he'd never replied to my email.
He's probably busy creating more.
Actually, he's some such kind of really boring lawyer now.
Well, by that song, I'm not even surprised.
Do you know who that is?
No.
There's a little song you might remember from back in the day.
Do tell.
The Mormon Rap.
I do not remember that song.
What about BYU of U?
Do not know that song.
Oh my goodness. You're so young.
There's only 4.5 years difference between us.
You don't remember those songs?
They were like, to me.
Mormon rap. Do the Mormon rap.
No, does not ring a bell.
I don't remember the BYU of U very well. But I've got them in there.
Of course you do.
I found them recently.
This is a room of holding, people, in case you don't know.
I was actually surprised when I was trying to track that down and I realized it was the same guy that did those.
So you found it at a thrift store, and mm-hmm. then you find out later he's the same religion that we are.
Yeah.
Or did he just write the songs?
No, I don't know.
You didn't ask him in your email?
No, I didn't. I just asked him for permission to use that.
You should have mentioned you were LDS. Then he would have answered your email.
No, I think he's too busy doing lawyerly things.
Boring lawyerly things.
Oh, it was a horrible website.
He's not a web designer.
Still, he's a lawyer. You can hire one.
Some lawyers might be thrifty.
He obviously... Maybe he's retired.
Well, coming from someone with a marketing management degree, it's always important to have a good website.
This website looked like it was built probably 95 and it hasn't really been updated since.
Travesty.
It is what it is.
Well, one thing that is not boring. Have you told listeners what room, the delights of this room we're sitting in?
Oh, it's been alluded to and mentioned and talked about.
I mean, I'm a little bit distracted.
So we should probably mention the phone number that you can call into.
867-5309.
Nope, that's the wrong number.
Oh, don't call that number, guys, because I didn't give you the area code. It's 801.
I think that number is valid, actually. Still, somebody has it.
I'd die.
Okay, so you can call into the podcast. The number is 801-382-7672. And right now, we are putting a call out for your best joke.
Ooh, can I tell my best joke?
Sure, tell us your joke.
Why did the hipster burn his mouth on the pizza?
I don't know. Why did the hipster burn his mouth on the pizza?
Because he ate it before it was cool. Right.
I like that one.
Thank you.
If I was screening jokes, that one would get on.
I'll call the number and leave a message.
Do it. So that was Take Me Higher.
Take Me Higher.
No, you didn't hear that in there at all.
That was a great song. I loved the funky organ.
So that was Take Me Higher by Jazzar off of an album called Tumbling Dishes Like Old Man's Wishes.
Dang, I like that name.
I don't know where Jess got it, but that's pretty cool. I think that brings us to the end of the podcast.
Let old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to life.
Is it old?
I have no idea.
I thought it was old.
That's Auld Lang Syne, but you're singing about your old acquaintances, not your old acquaintances.
I don't know. It's not even in English, so. It's in Scots.
Well, you're wearing a kilt and we claim Scottish heritage.
Just saying.
Is that how you end the podcast?
No, I don't end the podcast like this.
You don't sing Auld Lang Syne?
No. Why would I sing?
Because by the time this is posted, it'll be like New Year's Eve time.
No, it'll be next
week. Oh, we're just getting ready, guys. Don't jump the gun. How do we end the podcast, Richard?
So thanks for joining me on the podcast.
Thank you.
I hope you had fun.
I quite enjoyed myself. Very delightful.
Remember to call in with your best joke. The number is 801-382-7672.
All right, this week we had Hey, 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 Happy Birthday by Daniel C. Smith. An excellent interview with Brian H. Taylor with the intriguing binaural experience with the track titled Going to Work by Walt Gregory off the 3D Experience for Stereo Headphones album out 1984. The delightful Take Me Higher by Jazzar. This is Emily McLean of McLean Entertainment. And it's been a pleasure speaking with you fine people today. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting my talented husband Richard's podcast and the elusive mysterious Jess Smart Smiley. Go give a follow to Brian Taylor with the new intro by Sam Davis.
Please leave a message, everybody.
Please leave a message.
Good night.
And go follow everybody.
Good day.
On their social media.
I think we're done here.
I'm not done bloviating yet. Let me bloviate. Do you do outtakes? You are kind of ornery, though.
I am kind of ornery, but only when you don't mow me.
I know you pretty well, honey.
Passion. Stop it, you. You're being recorded.
I know.